What is the most beautiful like part of the Appalachian Trail?
New Hampshire and Maine, yeah. I'd say. Yeah, Vermont is pretty good. I actually really liked New Jersey too. Shockingly, I thought I was going to be walking through like Newark.
Shot of the highway.
Yeah, but it was like you basically hug the northeast corner of New Jersey. You go through like High Point State Park. Mm. There's some really scenic spots.
The Water Gap is like over there.
Yeah, Delaware Water Gap was awesome. Slept in this church and then just walked through like pristine wilderness. And I'm like, no shot, this is New Jersey.
That's insane.
Yeah, you're telling me there are like thousands of smokestacks like 40 miles that way, which I, you know, you're like, it's hard to believe when you're out there.
Matt, thank you for coming on to another episode of the Nicola Podcast.
For sure. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, we normally just kind of get right into it. So we were just talking about, you know, you being a teacher. You want to kind of start with that? Start about your kind of your journey in life. Where did you start teaching recently?
Yeah, it's been a journey for sure. I started teaching in Connecticut. Well, student teaching back after I graduated grad school in 2018.
Okay.
I did like student teaching in Southern Connecticut and then got my first full-time job in Manchester, New Hampshire, Manch Vegas, and taught there for 2 years. There was nothing going on in that city. I love the people I met, but other than those people, that city had nothing for me. And so I left and decided to do a little hiking trip, which I can get into later. And then when I got back from that, I moved to Boston here, so about a year and a half ago. Got a job just north of the city, teaching eighth grade, and then left that at the end of last school year. So now I'm kind of out of the teaching world right now and into the media world. So
that's how long have you been doing social media for?
I've been creating videos, like short form videos, since 2020. Probably more seriously since 2021, I'd say. It was more of like a hobby. I was making videos about hiking, doing like trending audio, stuff like that on TikTok, and then switched into more of a sketch character building like scheme in mid-2021 and kind of grew from there.
I want to ask you about like, it's always interesting to talk to content creators about like the first video that they posted or the first like time they recorded a video for social media, because were you just doing it to mess around, like you were like, this is cool, this is fun, or were you like, there's, you know, an opportunity here that I want to capitalize on?
It definitely wasn't like a capitalized opportunity thing. It was more, I had a lot of footage from this hike I went on and I put it into like a iMovie-esque like
is
montage.
This hike you went on the Pacific Crest Trail, or
so I did two else? I did two hikes. I okay. did the Appalachian Trail in 2019 and then the Pacific Crest in 2020.
That's crazy just to say like this hike I went on is like one of the biggest just, like, things in the country, but okay, yeah, to each their own.
At the end of the day, it was a walk in the woods, but
dude, it's like a kid going to Harvard. Oh, where'd you go to school? Oh, a small town outside of Boston.
That's crazy.
Yes, it was. I just had a bunch of clips from that, put it together. The worst editing you'll ever see in your entire life is like some kid in seventh grade could have done this for a school project. And I posted it. The thing blew up. It got, I want to say like 700,000 views.
Your first video ever.
First video, actually on TikTok. Yeah. I was posting like still images on Instagram. It was just like my personal Instagram, sure. But I just threw together.
Did you have
this
a photography
like,
account?
Yeah. Yeah. And so like 700,000 views. And so I'm like, oh, yeah, I guess people like want to know about what this hiking thing is like. So I made a couple more. The other one did like 500K, I'd say. And then people just started like asking questions in the comments. And so I would take one of the comments and like make a video about that, answering questions about hikes. It wasn't comedy themed whatsoever. Like that wasn't what I was going for. I was never a comedian. I still have that imposter syndrome where I'm like, I'm not a comedian. I feel like I'm not as funny as half the people out there. But it's turned into like making these characters and people are like getting such a kick out of it. I'm like, how is this my life right now? So it just started from like answering questions and went from there.
Where do the characters that you have now, like where do those come from? Is that life experiences? Is that like observations? Like you run into a dude at the supermarket, you're like, oh, that's kind of funny.
Yeah, I feel like a lot of it is life experience running into folks out in the wild, if you will. Like, there are some pretty intense people out there. I went to this like festival, this like hiking festival while I was on the trail. And just some of the people there, like people who are so obsessed with gear and like getting their kit dialed and making sure they're like the lightest pack out there. That was one of the things, was like ultralight backpacking kind of sparked my idea for it. And then people who lived in specific cities started to like embody those characteristics. So like some of my first really popular like sketch videos were every person who moved to like Bend, Oregon, or every person who moved to Boulder, Colorado.
That's the first, the Boulder one was the first one that I saw.
Yeah. Yeah. And that kind of propelled me. I did a week every day. I posted one of those. And then I kind of ran out of cities that were like that. And so I was like, how else can I make comedy about like this type of person? And I went into just different activities, different pieces of gear and people who use those things. And half the time it's about me. It's pretty self-deprecating is the term I like to use to describe it.
Yeah, no, it's always funny. It's like, it's relatable. And those people, I feel like it's such good content because someone can relate to that and someone can see that and be like, that's kind of funny. That's me. And like, if you're like mature enough or like you kind of like know that you can take the joke.
Yeah.
That's kind of poking fun at you.
Yeah.
It's funny. And then it'll do really well. And you build a following like that.
Yeah. I have this one guy who comments on every single one of my videos. I haven't really investigated who it is, but he just says, who hurt you? I hurt myself, man. I'm like, this is like all the things that I do in my life. And I'm like, wow, this is comical. Like some of the things I say, like that's, I just got a watch, like a GPS watch. And I made a video about it. And now I'm like turning into that person.
Guys who have the GPS watch.
Yeah. I'm like, how many steps do you think I had today? Or like, what's my heart rate? So
that's nuts. What is the process now? Like you must have it down to like somewhat of a science in terms of like the ideation of it when you think of a topic and like a stereotype to talk about, to like, you know, thinking of all the points that you want to, you know, hit on.
Yeah, so I'll I have a list in my phone of just concepts that I'm going to be making and things that I haven't done yet. And anytime I'm just like hanging with friends or somebody leaves a comment suggesting something, I'll type it into that note. So I have probably 75 to 100 like concepts in my just my notes app on my phone. I'm like super nonchalant about it. Some people have like a whiteboard in their room, and like, which would probably work better for me, to be honest, but I've just like stuck to my notes app. And so I'll take a concept. I like to have the idea for the next day's video in my head because my most productive time is right before I go to bed. And so I've found that like when there's no other thought in my head and I'm just kind of sitting there trying to rest, I come up with these concepts and just write them down, or little snippets for videos. So I'll go to bed being like, all right, tomorrow I'm going to film a video about people who mountain bike. And as I'm going to bed, I'm like, I could say this, this, and this. And I'll 6-7 times before I fall asleep, lean over and just type it into my phone. And the next day I'll like finalize the script, make sure it's all like, it makes sense. Like in terms of the narrative, and then I'll film it in snippets and piece it together.
So you always get a lot of people that like, you know, respond to these videos and they're actually butthurt about it. Like the guy, you know, you said the guy who mountain bikes, there's definitely mountain bikers out there. Like, oh, that's not me.
Like, oh yeah. It's like always that. The people who are like most guilty for that stereotype. You know, it's never the people who are like, oh, my relative like does this exactly. And they find it hilarious. It's usually the people who like wear those clear goggles and are just like walking into work covered in dirt that are like, this makes no sense. This is stupid.
Has anybody ever come up to you in public and be like, yo, you did this video, that you're so wrong about that?
Dude, I haven't had one like negative human interaction yet. And I'm waiting for the day. I'm waiting for the day that somebody walks up to me and they're like, you suck. You suck.
You're like, I live in Boulder and I actually do not fit into all these
criteria. And that's the day I go back to teaching for sure.
That's crazy. So on your day to day, we could talk about like, maybe first let's talk about like the shift from becoming from going into full-time teaching, working at a school to, you know, pursuing your own career in social media. What were like the main, you know, indicators that you were like, I could do this? And then like, what did your work start to look like on a daily basis?
Yeah, I was so busy for the whole time I was at this role just north of the city here. I would like lesson planning, grading, dealing with like parents, admin, all the stuff that goes along with teaching is busy enough. Like, so much respect for teachers. I feel like they put in so much work, and it's definitely not for everyone. But then on top of that, I had to make sure I was getting concepts written. So during my free periods at work or like lunch break, I would be writing scripts for after work. And then when I would leave the school at like 3:30, I would usually, there was a patch of woods between my gym and the school. And so I would have this like tripod. I would get in my car after doing like my work at the end of the school day, get in my car, drive to this patch of woods, set up the tripod, film the video, sit in my car, edit the video, post the video, drive to the gym, work out, go grocery shopping, go home, and then repeat the next day. It was like that for 4 months, 5 months. And I was like, this just isn't sustainable. I really enjoy teaching, but I also really enjoy writing these comedy scripts. And I think it's funny and people kind of get a kick out of it. So it just got to a point at the end of the year. I was like, how can I maybe make this a full-time thing? Can I make that step to just doing one or the other? And I started to get a couple brand deals with a few companies. And there was one that came in, I'd say like early summer, late spring, early summer of last year, that I'm like, this is it. Like, if I can keep these coming in and make the videos entertaining and show companies that we can work together and be successful, like, it's something we could totally do together and I can make this full time. So it was that like one deal that I was like, okay, this could work.
And then, you know, keeping that up is obviously like important. Like, you don't want to just like base that off of like one deal or one month.
Right.
So what were you doing in that time? Like, when you had this free time on your hands to be productive and like be proactive about getting like more, you know, sponsorship activations.
Yeah. Once I had one or two that performed really well, like I had this one video for North Face and it got like 5 million views and it did really well. They gave me really good feedback. Other brands started to realize that. So I started to get more companies like come in and DM me, send me emails and pitch to me. And, I kind of made it a point to make sure I'm only taking on like a few at a time, because I don't want to take on like 10 brands and then not give them quality content, you know, like make sure I can put my full effort into writing the script and making it funny and make it worth their while. So once I started to see that influx and that like larger quantity of companies start to reach out, then I was like, okay, I can maintain this and keep a schedule. And I just tried to get a little more organized there and space them out.
When your social media started blowing up, like, what did the kids that you were teaching think of it? What did the school administration think of it? Like, did anybody kind of, you know, positively accept it or negatively accept it?
Yeah, my team that I was on, so I taught eighth grade, so there was like, I was like the science teacher on the team. There was social studies, math, language arts, and every Tuesday we would have something called TikTok Tuesdays where we'd eat lunch together and we would just like put my TikToks up on the board, because they got a kick. It wasn't my idea. This wasn't my idea. They were like, they like walked into my room, sat down, they're like, put them up on the board. And we would just sit and watch them. And they got like such a kick out of them. And I'm like, this is so cringe. I don't know why we're doing this. So they were really receptive and positive about it. My admin, we never really had a conversation about it. But I did one day walk into the school and one of my students came like storming down the hall yelling my name. They're like, Matt, Mr. Lyons, whatever they wanted to call me. I found your videos on TikTok. And that whole day it spread like wildfire. Everyone was talking about it. They would come up to me, be like, do you know you're on TikTok? And I was like, I'm aware.
Do you know?
And it just got like spread everywhere that day. The next day, like radio silence. Nobody was saying a word. I realized like my humor doesn't really resonate with 12-year-olds. It's one of those things that I get a lot of like parents, like moms, dads, like mid-30s to mid-40s, a lot of that demographic. So they were talking about it and then they realized like, this isn't worth my time. They're like, you're going to go back to just being our teacher, you know?
Well, I feel like you talk about like earlier, it's like, it's all based on life experience.
Yeah.
So that's the people who have experience that have traveled to these places or seen these characters out and about. That's who it's going to resonate with.
That's a good point. Yeah. Yeah. So I, I kind of made it a point to talk to that day. I like addressed it. I'm like, listen, you might see me on your phone one day. And we're going to keep it at that. And like, I'm not going to be able to interact with you on social media. I just had to like draw the line. Cause at the end of the day, they are just my students and I'm their teacher. So, but yeah, that's about the extent of it. And it seemed to go over well.
Talk about the, you know, earlier days of like the hikes. I want to hear about the Appalachian and Pacific Crest Trail, like stories, like any like crazy encounters or like, you know, just what that was like, you know, going into that, preparing yourself, everything.
Yeah. Honestly, like even before that, like how, growing up, like was your family very outdoorsy? Like how did you get into becoming this kind of character of yourself?
Yeah, my dad was pretty outdoorsy. He rode his bike across the country when he was like mid-20s.
You're so casual. He's like pretty outdoorsy. Like, like just going for a hike. Like, come on.
Quick little ride.
No, Tony's a legend. Tony's a legend. He definitely inspired my interest in the outdoors. We would go on camping trips every year. And this one year we went up to New Hampshire. We ended up hiking Mount Washington. And I got to the top realizing it was like the highest peak in New England. I was like, this is pretty cool. That was freaking awesome. So I want to like keep doing this. I ended up getting a summer job in northern New Hampshire, leading backpacking trips for like teens. And that got me a lot of experience and more confident in the outdoors and kind of not only taking care of myself and making sure I was getting the amount of food, water, like staying out of trouble out there, but also taking care of a group of people. So as I was doing that, the Appalachian Trail goes right through where that place that I worked was. And so I met a lot of what they call through hikers, the people who hike the entire trail, and talked with them. One of my former coworkers ended up hiking the trail in like 2017. So as he came through, I was able to talk with him and get a lot of input as to what it takes to do something like that. So in 2019, right after grad school, I just kind of went and did it.
So you didn't prepare?
I mean,
you were used to hiking.
Yeah, I didn't like train or anything. I just made sure I had all the gear.
Sure.
And watched a lot of YouTube videos and then just bought a flight to Georgia and just
started walking.
Yeah. Yeah.
What like, mental state do you have to be in to prepare to like, do that? Because how long does it take to hike the Appalachian Trail? 3 months?
Usually like 4 to 6 months, somewhere in that range. So it was, I ended up doing it in like 4.5. Some people do it, there's like the fastest known time is what they call it. It's like 50 days. It's like a month and a half. Like that's some people do like 70 miles, 80 miles a day.
That's a lot, though. Yeah. That's like a little like, all
right. Yeah, I'm not that hard.
Those are the guys like, you're making videos about.
Yeah, to answer your question, you need to be in like a sick state of mind. Like, it's I feel like not many people will just go out and be like, I'm gonna quit my job or like I'm just gonna walk for a little while. So I have like massive respect for people who at least even just try it, you know. And as long as you have like that mental piece there, I believe like anyone can do it. It's just some people go out and they're like, wait, I have to walk for the next 4 months. I don't want to, there's so many other things I'd rather be doing. Like you have to want to be there and be doing it and appreciate it. Otherwise it's going to suck. Cause some days do suck out there.
Are you walking every single day? Or are you like, there's a day you just like kind of kick back in your hammock and you just chill or
usually like once a week, once every week and a half, I'd take what's called a zero day, which is 0 miles. And there are like hostels or towns along the way that you can get a ride into. You can kick back. They have bunks for like $15 a night. And so that was kind of my schedule. I would just walk for like a week and a half, just sleep in the tent. And then when I needed a shower to wash my clothes, I would go stay at a hostel and do all that.
What was the craziest like day of that entire hike or multiple days?
This one in Vermont, I ended up doing, it was like every hike that I go on, I try to do like one day where I can see how many miles I can do. And for some reason I chose like the most rugged section in Vermont to attempt this. And I ended up doing like 36 miles and I was just walking. Like I wasn't running or anything, but I was just like, how long can I walk before I want to quit? Like my legs can't do it anymore. I just don't want to keep walking. And I did like 36 miles. The end of that one, I physically couldn't feel my legs because not only was it 36 miles, but it was probably 15, 16,000 feet of elevation. It was like a lot of elevation change too. And so I got to the end of that and I'm like, all right, I got to cool down a little bit and maybe not do that again. But there were also some days where I just saw like wildlife. The weather was pretty insane. So it was a pretty cool experience all around.
Well, what percent of days like on trail are you by yourself? And what percent of days like do you meet other people?
I was on the AT, I was with people probably 60 to 70% of the time, somewhere in that range.
Do you like meet buddies like on the trail and you do like, you know, a week hiking with them and then you kind of part ways?
Or? Yeah. So I started solo. The first night I met this group and we hiked together for like a month and a half. So you meet people, you create like what's called a trail family or like a tramily, they call it. Kind of.
I'm learning so much lingo right now.
Yeah.
The
yeah.
AT, zero days.
Little crash course in long distance hiking. So I hiked with them for like a month and a half. After that, we kind of parted ways. I was on and off with people here and there for like a day or two. But for the most part, I was solo, for the rest of the trail. On the PCT, I was with people the entire way, except for like 4 days.
It seems like both of those get like a lot of foot traffic too, because they're just so popular and like there's only certain seasons that you can do them, right? You know, so you're going to run into, you're not going to be like alone out there at all, right?
No, there were only a handful of days where I didn't see anybody. And that was, on the AT, it was up in northern Maine. They call it like the 100-mile wilderness. There was like one day we didn't see a single person. And then on the Pacific Crest Trail in northern California, there were 4 days when I wasn't with this group I was hiking with. And I saw, it was a 100-mile stretch, 3.5 days. I saw like one other person in those 3.5 days. But other than that, you see a ton of people.
Is that like that? I mean, you just say, what's it, the 100-mile wilderness?
Yeah.
Like, that sounds like the most beautiful thing like ever. What is the most beautiful like part of the Appalachian Trail?
New Hampshire and Maine, I'd say. Yeah, Vermont is pretty good. I actually really liked New Jersey too. Shockingly, I thought I was going to be walking through like Newark.
Shadow highway.
Yeah, and it was like you basically hug the northeast corner of New Jersey. You go through like High Point State Park. Mm. There's some really scenic spots.
The Water Gap is like over there.
Yeah, Delaware Water Gap was awesome. Slept in this church and then just walked through like pristine wilderness. And I'm like, no shot, this is New Jersey.
That's insane.
Yeah, you're telling me there are like thousands of smokestacks like 40 miles that way, which I, you know, you like, it's hard to believe when you're out there. But
that might be a first. Nobody's ever said that about New Jersey.
I freaking loved it. Maybe I got it on a good day. Yeah. I don't know.
That's nuts. What about the PCT?
PCT, Northern Washington. So like leading up to the Canadian border, like the North Cascades National Park. Incredible. And then the Sierra. So like going through Yosemite and Kings Canyon and Sequoia, like all of those national parks was outrageous.
Kind of continuing to compare them, what's harder, the Pacific or the Appalachian Trail?
Like terrain wise and like in terms of like elevation change, the AT is actually harder. I feel like logistically the PCT is harder. You have a lot more different weather scenarios. Mm. Resupply is a lot more challenging. Towns are just further from the trail. Like sometimes you have to hitch a ride like 20 miles to get to a town to get more food. Whereas on the AT, you're like, the trail like goes through a supermarket in one spot. <It's> like, so logistically the PCT, I'd say the AT is a lot more like mentally and terrain wise more challenging.
How long does the PCT take?
PCT is longer mileage, but I ended up hiking it faster for some reason. I did it in like roughly four months, but it's like 400 miles longer. So that just goes to show you like the elevation change is a little more drastic on the AT. I averaged like 17 miles a day on the AT and like 20 to 21 on the PCT.
With these like long, like society, like removing like hikes that you do, like what is it like entering back into like a city or like normal life, I guess we could call it, like afterwards of like 4 months of like silence and like very just like primitive living?
Yeah, it's definitely drastic. I miss the simplicity. Like going back to a full-time job is pretty tragic, to be honest, because out there all you have to worry about is like eating enough food, drinking water, and finding a place to sleep, and that's it. Out here you have to do all of that and then make a living. And, you know, so it's definitely an adjustment. And a lot of people have like post-trail depression, which is a very like valid thing and happens to a ton of hikers. Fortunately, I didn't really experience that because I had a ton of friends around me and family and people that I could like interact with on a day-to-day basis. And I wasn't really solo out on the hike, so I was socializing quite a bit. But I definitely missed a lot of it, and it was a tough transition for a little while there.
It's like you talk about like post-trail depression as like a known thing. Like,
yeah.
What are the main like mental health like implications of that? Is it normally positive, or, you know, you end up like with these kind of like things afterwards because of, you know, that almost high that you were on just like with this super simple life?
That's pretty much it. You go from like such a high and such simplicity to just everything moving so fast. Mm. Like living in Boston, just trying to find a parking spot when I got here today, I was like, this is such chaos. And out there, I'm just like putting up my tent, reading a book, like drinking water, looking at mountains. It's just everything moves so much slower. So I think that that instant change just rattles people. And that can just like spiral into, how do I get back to that? So a lot of people who do one hike end up doing 4, 5, 6. They just keep going back because it's a lifestyle that like not many people get to experience. And once you taste it, it's solid.
What hike's next for you then?
I don't have any long ones on my mind, like in the works right now, but I would love to do the long trail in Vermont. That's on my list. I want to do the Colorado Trail, which basically runs from like southwest of Denver down to Durango through the Rockies. I've heard that's beautiful. And then eventually maybe the Continental Divide, which is like the third of the Triple Crown.
That'd be pretty awesome.
Yeah. So I don't have anything like on the immediate horizon though.
Coming back to like the, you know, full-time social media stuff and all that, do you think that, you know, kind of post-trail depression or whatever you want to call it, like, and then like I don't know the exact time frame, but like shortly after, like a couple months or years after, being able to go all in and work for yourself, like, was a good thing for your well-being and just being able to not have to worry about your schedule as much, and like, you know, you're still holding yourself accountable to do your work and everything, but you're a little bit more like in control yourself.
Yeah, it definitely is nice to have more autonomy over like what I do day to day. I feel super fortunate to be able to do that. Like, not many people get the opportunity. But it's definitely a challenge, but I feel like hiking instilled that sense of autonomy in me. Like, I was fully responsible for my well-being out there physically and like health-wise. Same thing out here, but now in terms like financially and getting through these hurdles. 'Cause if I don't, I'm kind of screwed in both scenarios. So I think it taught me a lot about resilience. And if like, say, viewership is down, engagement's down, I'm not getting brand deals, like I have to get myself out of that hole and like put in the work to get to a spot where I'm successful again. So
besides brand stuff, like, what other ways have you been able to make this a career for yourself, and like, have you diversified into other income streams? I know you've done stuff in like the clothing space as well. Yep. But like live entertainment or other things you're like looking into?
I have some merch that's live. I want to kind of put more effort and time into that. That's definitely a goal of mine this year. I don't really do live entertainment. I'm actually terrified of like stand up and stuff like that. Like standing up on a stage, I had such stage fright for a long time. My brothers were actually both into like acting when they were younger. I'm like, how did you do that? I would never get into a place where I'm like the center of attention. And now everywhere I go, people are like, oh, do you do stand up? Are you booking gigs? Like, what's the deal? And I'm like, no, I'm not right now. Maybe it's something I do in the future. But it's not really like on my mind. I think the stars would have to align for me to try that. And I'd really have to step out of my comfort zone. So I'm not like brushing it aside, but I don't know. It's just not something I've been thinking about. I've been doing things like Cameo. I've been doing the merch. I'm trying to think of some other stuff that I've done. Those are the main three right now. So,
and then the brand deals too. I think like you come from a place where it's very natural with a product. Like, you can fit that into your content organically and, like, in a way that, like, people will actually want to watch. So, like, what have you learned about, like, working with brands and, like, making content that actually performs, like, you know, over time from that?
Yeah, I think the primary goal and what I've seen with my videos and talked to brands about is, like, I'm not really trying to drive direct sales from my videos. It's more just bringing awareness to products and the brand itself. A lot of people will watch the videos. Sometimes they've never heard of that brand, and now they've seen it in a comedic sense, and that's going to kind of drive them to pay attention to that more in the future. So I've kind of used that as my point of emphasis when I'm talking to representatives for brands. And I think that's been my main drive of success with those types of videos. So in the future, like, if I have a theme or a concept in my notes app on my phone, I can send it to a brand and be like, I have this idea for a video. I think you would make a great partner for this content, and let me know your thoughts and we can talk through some ideas. And usually that works. 90% of the time brands are sending me an email and we kind of go from there. But if there's one that I'm like, this could be really beneficial for both parties, I'll reach out to them, and typically it goes pretty well.
Do you have an example of, like, a brand or, like, product?
Yes. So there's this company called Fly Low. They make a lot of, like, ski, snowboard apparel.
Oh, was that the bibs?
Yeah. So I had this this concept for bibs, like ski bibs, because you'll see people walk into breweries or, like, bars after a day of skiing.
I've seen this video. I didn't, yeah.
Yeah, and they're, like, wearing their bibs. I swear, I was in Aspen this past winter. Drove 40 minutes to my buddy's place out, like, almost out of the valley, like, from the mountain. And we're at this restaurant. It's like a sit down restaurant, not even near the mountain itself. Some guy has his helmet and goggles and bibs on in the restaurant. I'm like, dude, you couldn't, like, put a hat on. You don't need to have your helmet on right now. And so, like, when I realized, like, this could be a hilarious video, I reached out to Fly Low. I ended up talking directly with, like, their CEO and their founder. And we're like, this could be hilarious. So now we, like, go back and forth. I've done a few videos for them and they've all been, like, very successful.
Flylo's dope, and their like, quality is, like, insane.
Yeah,
like, their
stuff I love
is,
it.
Like, amazing.
I'm like, and I find myself, like, turning into the bib guy. So, like, I went to my girlfriend and I went to this place after a day of skiing this year, and we're like, should we take off all our ski stuff and then put our bibs back on and go get a beer?
Might as well, right? Why didn't you pull up in a bib today?
Yeah, you know? I should have.
Nice May day today.
All the resorts are closed pretty much. So yeah, I find myself, like, embodying certain stereotypes after the fact. But that's one example that comes to mind.
Overall, too, it feels like, and
no,
like, you
pun
could,
intended.
It feels
right,
like
it feels your head for a sec there.
Yeah, dude. It feels like a lot of these outdoor brands and the ones that are in the space that you're in are awesome, and they're just, like, cool people that, like, are fun to work with. The brands have a cool message. They're all trying to do good, you know, for the greater, like, the environment or whatever it is. And, like, it's probably cool to be, like, in that space, and, like, those are the people that you get to work with, rather than, like, I mean, a different industry that might not be as easygoing and fun to work with.
Yeah. I've been really fortunate to work with some cool brands. And occasionally I say that once it's happened where I, like, I'll reach out to a brand. I have this really good idea and I think it'd be so funny. And I get an email back and they're like, sorry, we just don't want to make a video that, like, pokes fun at our product. I'm like, to each their own, but you're missing out because this could be hilarious. I won't name the brand, but it was pretty funny.
That's crazy. Yeah, no, and it's cool when a brand, like, has the self, like, awareness to be able to know that, like, you're poking fun at it, but it's really, like, gonna help your brand, like, overall. And, like, you know, fitting that into your marketing strategy is really important. And, like, you know, the ROI is not important for this. It's all awareness. Like, we just had
Tommy Garino on.
I actually heard that clip. Like, all these people are asking, like, what's the ROI? How much, like, give us a number. How much are we going to make from this video? And it's like, at the end of the day, like, you built this audience, right? And, like, working together, like, it's just exposure. Like, you're getting your name out there. Working together could, like, incentivize other creators to want to work with you or bring in new deals in different ways. Like, it might not turn to sales, right, directly, but it's going to be beneficial in other ways.
Yeah, now I think of bibs, I think of Fly Low.
There you go.
There's other companies that make the bibs, but yeah, because of their stuff, and obviously their quality and all that stuff too, but because of the way they position it online, like it really helps.
Yeah.
So, no, that's cool. What other like stuff going forward, like, you know, longevity-wise, making this, you know, something that lasts?
Yeah.
Or is this social media something you want to do for a little while and go back to teaching, or, you know, what's that look like?
I'm definitely pretty aware that this certain style of video could be exhausted at some point. There are other things on my mind. Like, I really want to start a podcast. This is really cool to get on and like see how your operation works. And like, I'm super impressed with like how you can produce something like this. So that's definitely a goal of mine to create something where I can talk to people in the realm of like what my videos are about. Say I make a video about like mountain biking, like bring somebody in that is in that sphere and like talk to them and be like, these are some things that people look at a mountain biker and think, like, what are your thoughts on that? So talking and like expanding into that could be really cool. And that's something that's on my mind. I would love to get into just acting too. I want to take some classes and kind of build that skill a bit and maybe get into more like screen acting or things that are not in front of a live audience. Because I don't want to shit my pants. And I think those are the two main things that I'm striving to do in the future. Because I don't know how this style of video is going to, how long it's going to last, to be honest. So that's always on my mind. But
have you tested other styles too? And like they've flopped, or, you know, you've seen some potential with other things?
Yeah, I've seen some. I have some ideas too that I want to try. I want to definitely start working with other creators too. A lot of my stuff is super independent. So a skill I want to use is like creating content with other people and kind of bouncing back and forth, doing more improvisation stuff. So that's been on my mind as well. But before, like 2 years ago, maybe a year and a half ago, I tried other styles. Some of them did well, some of them didn't. So I think with social, it's definitely a trial and error thing. Like, what are people going to respond to? And I found the most responses to things like I'm doing now, where I take one topic and just make something about it, make it funny. But I'm open to the idea of trying other things too.
For all the brand stuff too, did you ever get a manager or anyone else helping you? Or was it always just you doing it on your own?
No, I've been going solo right now. I've considered it. But I've just kind of realized that I can, talking to the brands directly, I can get a better sense of what they're looking for, and I can express what I'm looking to do more directly, like going through a third party. My girlfriend actually works for a marketing agency who works with influencers on the brand side. And so she keeps saying that like it's so stressful when a brand has this idea and they have to go through two channels to get it to the creator. So I found just like streamlining it creator to brand has been the most efficient, and I'm able to manage it right now. If it gets to a point where I'm like in over my head, I'll definitely go that route.
It's a good problem to have too.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Like right now I'm able to handle it. If I want to see more growth and maybe get into other areas where I don't have as much expertise, maybe that's an idea. But I've been able to kind of go through the process myself pretty successfully, I think.
Can you make fun of us? Can you make fun of the guys on a podcast?
Yeah, we gotta do one of those.
We were arguing on who came up with the idea, so I don't wanna.
I think it was you. I for some reason I thought it was me, but it was him.
But I'm thinking just like every podcast I've seen, like a video podcast I've seen, just like perfectly symmetrical seating arrangement. Like the chairs are in such a way in a semicircle, and I was thinking of names too. I was thinking something about like Road Mike or something, like something podcasty that could be the name, because that's a big theme of my videos. So whether it's like Futon could be the video, the name for the guy, or I don't know,
what's up, I'm
like
Road Mike.
Ottoman, like putting your feet up on something, tripod, yeah, whatever it could be. So we should definitely cook something up and make it happen.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
But
again, I saw you did one of the podcast ones a long time, like a while ago.
Yeah.
And it was the guys who lift the guys who like only lift upper body, right?
Yeah, it's like dudes who only bench start a podcast.
And that's all they talk about, yeah, their entire
personality. Like the framing of the video is from the waist up and nothing more. And
that's one that I feel like you could get some like backlash on. Like those guys would be like, coming after you.
Yeah. Like, yeah, I'm not going to step foot near a bodybuilding gym after making something like that. But I do actually love fitness as well. And I'm trying, that's one of the biggest challenges to creating. I found that I can't get into a routine in the gym because I'm traveling a lot. My schedule is different every day. Whereas teaching, I had this strict routine that I would go through, and I would have this gym right on the way home. It went at the same time every day. So with creating, I found getting in and working out, like obviously you need discipline for something like that. And I've had times in my life, for example, between hikes and getting a job, where I was at the gym like every day. And I actually, for my, basically for my structure or frame, I feel like I got pretty big, and I'm like, I want to get back to that. So that's been a goal of mine as well. It's just trying to like get back in the gym and focus on fitness a little more. And build up my discipline with that. So that's something I'm working towards as well.
What is your daily? Like you talk about travel, you talk about it being different every day, which I think we can relate to a lot of people that listen to this too.
Yeah.
Like, what does that look like? You can't like say a typical day, but like if you're here or, you know, some of the cool travel experiences you've been, you know, been able to do recently because of what you're doing now.
Yeah, I've done a couple podcasts I've like flown out to do. I kind of grouped it with like a ski trip and stuff, but I did one out in Colorado. So I've been able to travel for a couple podcasts, which is really cool. There are a couple ski resorts that I've talked with and made trips for. For example, in Vermont, I went up and stayed at like Stratton. I was working with Icon Pass for a little bit. So did a couple ski trips with them. So it definitely opens up some travel opportunities. Music festivals, like I'm going to a few music festivals this year, working with them to create content.
You're doing Boston Calling, right?
I'm doing Boston Calling, yeah. So I'm excited for that one. This other one called Levitate down in Marshfield that I'm going to be going to. So it's opened up some really cool opportunities, going to launch parties for certain like bars around here, restaurants. Just things
I
never...
Were you at the F1?
Yeah. Were you there?
Yeah, we were there.
No way.
I saw you and then got like... We got like sidetracked with Davis Clark, but
you were too locked in, man.
We were too locked in, you know.
But, you guys are in the corner hammering spreadsheets.
Hammering spreadsheets, just you know, letting the heavy hitters know that we're there on a Thursday.
But absolutely,
that was a pretty cool spot.
Really cool. Yeah, I was talking to one of like the people who financed the whole building, and I was asking him about how many simulators they have, and this dude, I swear, his net worth must be like nine figures. This guy looks at me in the face. He's like, "We've got 69 simulators."
Was it the
Gives
British
me
dude?
A fist bump. Dude.
It was the British like, dude, right?
Like
the
guy in the F1 crazy jacket.
Suit. Yeah, dude. Yeah.
So he owns F1. He owns Putt Shack.
Yes.
He owns like Flight Club, like all of the activity bars in Seaport.
And all around the country.
He owns all of those, and then all of those around the world.
Yeah, I'm about to banter with this guy who could own like this entire, like so many buildings in this city. Like, where am I right now? I was a teacher 4 months ago.
Yeah, no, that's a really cool spot. They're going to be like booked out for all summer.
Really?
Like, I think they got like, what was it? 7,000 reservations in the first like 3 days of like opening their website.
That's nuts. That's crazy. Nuts. It was really cool to go in there too. I was, they had that ice sculpture. That was sick.
People were taking shots.
Anytime there's an ice sculpture, you're like,
it's pretty legit.
You're in a cool spot.
Yeah. That's crazy. So, no, awesome. That's it's always like, it's always a blessing to be able to travel and to like do like fun stuff and then be able to call it work.
Yeah.
I feel like so.
Yeah. It's almost like hard to believe. Like I always the thing with that is it never ends. So I've found that to be a challenge as well. Like I'm traveling, I'm on a ski trip with a couple of friends, my girlfriend, but I'm like, how can I make this into content, you know? And I try to kind of separate when I can. Like I'll have a video idea, I'll try and film it in like an hour period and then just kind of turn off my brain and try and enjoy the moment a bit. So it's tough, especially on weekends because everyone's out of the office. They're like, it's the weekend for them, right? But I'm like, okay, I need to make a video today, or I'm behind a schedule on these things. I got to get them done. So that's been a little stressful. I've learned to take like one break a year, like around the holidays, where I'm like nothing, or I'll post like throwback videos. And so I'm only like a year and a half in, maybe a year into full time. And that's been one of the biggest challenges too.
Well, yeah, it's about 2 years, like 12-year-old students and co-workers and stuff. But what did your parents, you know, and family and friends like think of this when you went full time?
I remember I was telling my parents, I'm like, I think I'm going to leave teaching. They're like, you sure about that? They like made me second guess. But at the same time, they're just looking out for my well-being. Like, I totally understand that. And they didn't know all the little details of what led to that decision to go full-time. So it took a little bit of reassuring. And I think now that we're like a year in and it's still going well, they're like, all right, maybe it was like the right move. Because even then, my mom texts me a bunch and she's like, that's sick that you're able to go on this trip or like meet these people. They're like, I didn't know that was part of this. And I'm like, yeah, it's pretty sick.
And like, there must be some benefit to them too, because like you have more free time. I'm sure like you're able to see them a little bit more, maybe,
yeah,
or even involve them into like a trip. If like you get an extra invite to something, like
exactly,
they might be able to tag along.
Yeah, like they're coming down to this festival in Marshfield, and they're gonna be there for like one of the days. I'm like, that's super cool that Sweet. I'm able to do that.
Yeah.
And then I'll pop. They live in Southern Connecticut. I'm like, I'll pop home on a Tuesday. They're like, what are you doing here? Like, it's like the middle of the work week. And I'm like, hey, what's up? Like, I got to get to work. I'm like, I'm going to be sitting on the couch here writing scripts. But so it definitely opens up some opportunities. But I occasionally feel like that unemployed friend on a Tuesday.
I think
we're always saying that too.
Yeah.
I'm like, what am I doing? I need to be productive right now.
We were saying that like we've almost become like, this is going to sound so cocky, but we've been like desensitized to cool shit.
Yeah.
Because we get to go on like so many trips. And like you said, like, this is my life. Like when we were at F1, like we were in a section with a bunch of Patriots players.
Yeah.
And like that was work for us because we're out there, you know, like meeting people who are,
right,
you know, somebody in Boston.
Yeah.
And I don't know what else has there been.
Like, I mean, just I've everything. Done, yeah. Like I have worked as like a content creator and like social media person, like for, you know, like 3 or 4 years now.
Yeah.
And like been all over the country, like just at this point, like so many events and like notable things, and like it's hard to even list them.
Yeah.
But it's like these are things, like we were talking about it, it's like a lot of the experiences you get when you build a following or have like a reason to be somewhere and you get invited, it's priceless. So you can't even buy the ticket for that access or for that, you know, event or whatever,
right?
Because it's like curated people that the brand or the company that's putting it together, mm-hmm, want in the building. And like that's when it's like so rewarding, when,
right,
like you could have the most money in the world and you wouldn't even be able to buy that ticket, or like,
yeah,
you could think like that, right?
Exactly.
And so like that's like just like, you know, makes it all worth it at the end of the day.
Yeah, opportunities are sweet. Like I was able to go, the New England Revolution had a few of us to the game when Messi was playing at the stadium. And I was like in this suite, stadium sold out. I'm like, I would never be here if it weren't for this creator world that I'm in.
Yeah.
So like opportunities like that. It's also been like people recognizing me every once in a while is such a change too. Like I'll go, if I go to a ski resort in Colorado, I went to like Copper Mountain last year and I was probably at like 200,000 followers at that time. And I was getting a beer at the base lodge, like towards the end of the day, 65 people came up to me, like in certain spaces. But then I'll go to like Omaha, Nebraska, and people are like, fuck off, you're just a random dude. So it's like, depends on where my videos are located. Like if it's in an outdoorsy area, it tends to happen a lot.
Even Boston is probably not quite as much.
Not
right?
a ton, but like still a lot. Like yeah. the F1 event, it was still like a decent amount of people. And that's just such a change for me, but it's really cool. It's really, yeah. really
sweet. Because like when we talk about Tommy, like we had him on last week.
Yeah.
And like his whole personality and like content is Boston. So he'll
yeah.
be around Boston. And like he was talking about he'd go somewhere else and people would see him. But like for the most part, he can't go anywhere in Boston without that.
Yep.
And for you, it's like, you go like on a hike or like go to like Boulder yeah. or, you know, Copper,
yeah.
any of these ski resorts that like, that's your demo. That's, you know, that's your Boston.
Yeah. And I have Boston, Mass in my bio on Instagram, yet I have so many people asking if I live in like Boulder, Colorado or live in Burlington, Vermont. I'm trying to like emphasize that I'm not in those places, but everyone still thinks like, I thought you were from this state or this city.
You've done a couple like Boston videos, right?
A couple. I did like every person who moves to Boston like a long time ago. Mm-hmm. I don't think it did well at all. I'm trying to think if I did any other ones. Did you see one about Boston?
I think it might have been the every person that moves to Boston.
Yeah, that was a long time ago.
And it was like, I'm subletting this spot, like, yeah, or something like,
yeah,
that.
Yeah. It's, but like at the same, I feel like I don't relate to Boston people quite as much as other places. Mm-hmm. So
yeah, and then like collaboration wise, have you like worked with any like Boston content people or?
No, I'm in the works with a couple people and like chatting about concepts. That's something I wanna get better at, is like, mm-hmm, working with other creators. So I've talked with a few. I actually hadn't really met a ton of other creators until like a month ago. Now I'm like starting to meet them more often because I'm going to, I think people are realizing that I'm in Boston, so I'm getting a few more invites to places around here.
Yep.
So we'll see. I think as I meet more creators, I'll work with them a little bit closer. So I felt a little separated from them before, but it's cool to actually meet them in person and be like, we can make this happen.
Yeah. Totally.
So, yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, thank you, Matt. That was awesome. For sure. Cool to just hear some stories and hear your journey and,
yeah,
kind of, yeah, we'll keep us posted, you know?
I will. It was a good chat.
Maybe we'll rip a ski day next year.
Oh, dude. Yeah, we got to get on the mountain.
Name a time. Right. Name a day. I mean,
Killington's probably got some snow still.
They might be the only ones still open, I think. They usually stay open until like June, right?
Yeah. I didn't get a single day in this year.
No?
We've said this a million times in the podcast. Like, literally, you look back, we probably said it in like 2/3 of the episodes. But we got in like a really bad car crash together when we were going down to New York City, Nashville.
Oh, shit.
And then I broke my humerus. So,
I did see you in a sling at one point.
Yeah. Yeah.
Damn.
So I couldn't do it the entire summer.
Are you fully healed up now?
For the most part, yeah.
Nice. Wow, dude.
I got a couple days in, but I bought the full icon.
Yeah.
Thinking, I was like, I got a bunch of friends in Utah. Like, I grew up ski racing. Like,
yeah.
A big skier. The first year, like, you know, I'm living like on, like, here in Boston. Like, I'm just like, I can't like leave. Like, I got so much stuff to do. And it's like, yeah, I thought I was going to go to Utah like 4 or 5 times this year. Went once.
Damn.
But yeah. It would have been cheaper for you to like not buy the icon and just pay per day.
Right? I know. Probably. We'll see.
Yeah. Unless you go like 6 or 7.
That's times, why I want to go to Killington right now. So
yeah,
we'll pack up the car.
Let's send it. Get going. Pack all this shit up. We'll do a remote pod.
For sure. So thank you, Matt.
Awesome.
Of course. Thanks for having me, guys.